A tenant farmer from Rozzano thought he saw a little smoke under the table, perhaps a cigarette in the wastebasket. A lady, however, noticed something glittering underneath.
It's 4:37 p.m. on December 12, 1969, when suddenly an immense rumble shakes the National Bank of Agriculture in Piazza Fontana in Milan. The square is already full of Christmas lights. It's winter. It's cold. A boiler could have exploded, but a boiler doesn't cause a half-meter hole.
It's the end of warm autumn. The united protests of the workers have been successful. Important results have been achieved. The workers obtain very advantageous contracts, and the ruling class is scared. The advance of the joint struggles of workers and students must be put to an end. The country that demands transformations and more rights for workers scares the ruling class, conservative sectors, and large industrial interests.
It is 4:37 p.m. on December 12, 1969, and what has just exploded in Milan is a bomb. The investigations begin immediately. In the confusion of the square, policemen and agents find metal splinters, fragments of zippers, bloody fabric, amputated limbs, and mutilated corpses. There will be 17 to be precise. All evidence is placed in a yellow envelope.
And a simple fragment of vinyl turns out to be the missing piece of the puzzle. It is the same vinyl leather as a series of briefcases found on that day in both Rome and Milan. Suitcases identical to the one that contained the bomb that exploded in Piazza Fontana. The police is in a hurry.
Hurry to find someone to condemn. After just 4 days, and without an official statement, the name of the first accused is given to journalists. His anarchist Pietro Valpreda. After all, who could have been if not an anarchist? One of those crafty rebels who never did anything good in their life except cause harm.
Or at least that's what they want us to believe about Pietro Valpreda, a simple dancer. Even before Valpreda, Giuseppe Pinelli, a young railway worker and family man, is interrogated at the police station. Another anarchist.
Pinelli is detained at the police station for 3 days. He will never go to jail. He will never be acquitted. His wife is warned by journalists that her husband has fallen from the fourth floor of the police station. His wife Licia calls the police station. She wants to know why they didn't contact her immediately. "We didn't have time," they reply.
It is December 15 and the circumstances of Pinelli's death are mysterious. Some speak of a suicide, others of a murder, and still others of an illness. For those who know him, accepting the possibility of a suicide, the official version of the police headquarters, is impossible, because the young railway worker family man loved life way too much.
However, the reconstructions demonstrated the inconsistency of this hypothesis. The man nearly fell vertical in a way that wouldn't have occurred if he had thrown himself. Instead, the cold in the room, the little sleep, the hunger, and too many cigarettes are the clues that made think of a sudden illness.
On the other hand, the homicide hypothesis, according to which Pinelli would have been pushed over from the window of the central police station, is never carried on. It is not known if because it's unfounded or because of diversions. The only clear thing is that still nowadays his death is surrounded with an air of mystery. The family has never got the truth.
The investigations into the carnage of Piazza Fontana continue, and in parallel to the anarchist's lead, another lead is opened, the black lead, the neo-fascist one. The second lead, after Pinelli's death, replaces the first one. It grows and expands.
The heads of the neo-fascist organization in question are Franco Freda and Giovanni Ventura. Afterwards, it also appears the name of Giannettini, an extreme right-wing journalist and member of the Italian Secret Service.
The first relevant trial to find the perpetrators of the massacre opens before the court of assizes of Catanzaro in 1977. Initially, Freda, Ventura and Giannettini are sentenced to life imprisonment as they are believed to be the organizers of the massacre.
Valpraed and other anarchists are acquitted for lack of evidence in this same process. In 1994, it begins a second trial that leads to the acquittal of all the defendants for insufficient evidence, leaving the case unsolved again. The third and final trial is held in Milan in 2005. This time the culprits are identified, yet without being convicted, because already acquitted. This is Franco Freda and Giovanni Ventura.
The history of this case, involving 34 defendants over 36 years, with hundreds of witnesses and dozens of lawyers, involves entire Italy. The Piazza Fontana massacre on December 12, 1969, marks the beginning of a series of devastating attacks, earning the title of the mother of all massacres.
Actual terrorist attacks shake Italy between 1969 and 1980, culminating in the tragic slaughter of Bologna in 1980, claiming 85 lives and injuring 200. But what was the objective behind these terrorist acts? The most commonly cited explanation refers to the so-called strategy of tension.
Piazza Fontana and the following attacks, in which places attended by common people like city squares, train stations and banks were hit, would have had the purpose to arouse a feeling of tension in the Italian population in order to induce them to accept changes, also authoritarian ones, in exchange for safety. However, this strategy won't reach the intended outcome.
There will neither be coup d'etat nor the approval of special laws nor restrictions of freedom. The young Italian democracy withstands for the moment. But the night of the Republic has just begun.